Ladies and gentlemen, the sound you hear is a buzzsaw ripping through a painting of George Washington chopping down cherry trees. It's time for Professor Buzzkill, busting myths and taking names.
Well, 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 Buzzkillers, it's your favorite professor back again. You know, almost every presidential election of my buzzkilling lifetime has included a debate between the main candidates. And practically every time the debates roll around, the question of style over substance rears its overly made-up face. Do the debates inform voters about the candidate's stance on issues of the day, or are they just political beauty contests to see who looks more presidential? The larger question always seems to be, has television turned presidential campaigns into little more than content-free pageants, beauty pageants for the office? And nearly every time the style over substance in the media age issue comes up, commentators point to the Kennedy-Nixon debates during the election of 1960 as the historic start of the process. Here's the standard story. And by the way, it's so standard and well-known that it's been more or less taken as fact for over 50 years. Democrat John Kennedy and Republican Richard Nixon were both young World War II Navy veterans who'd served in Congress since 1947. Further, Nixon had been vice president under Eisenhower since 1953. And they met in the first ever presidential debate on September 26, 1960, in Chicago. American networks televised it nationwide. JFK appeared healthy, handsome, well-dressed, and gave confident and articulate answers to the debate questions. Nixon, on the other hand, looked haggard, sweaty, awkward, and was plagued by 5 o'clock shadow. The differences in their appearance swamped the differences in the candidates' policy positions in the mind of television viewers. And Kennedy was thought to have won the debate because he projected a much better image. In fact, so the standard story goes, those who listened to the debate on radio thought that Nixon had won because his answers were more substantial, and the radio listeners weren't biased by Kennedy's better visual appearance. There are so many problems with this commonly held interpretation of the debate that it's almost difficult to know where to start. But let me begin by saying it's not surprising that this myth has become so strongly attached to the American historical consciousness. It's been repeated and published almost constantly over the decades and regularly appears in the history textbooks that we've all read in school and probably that our children are reading in school now. So we've heard it from sources that are generally considered solid and legitimate. It's no wonder it's become part of our political DNA. But the actual evidence for the Nixon lost the debate because he looked so bad argument is so shaky that it hasn't stood up to even basic scrutiny. And the scholarly research done by Professor David Greenberg at Rutgers University, Professor James Druckmann at Northwestern University, and many other scholars has scrutinized it even further. Taken together, these studies by these very high-level buzzkillers have shown that the 1960 opinion polls of TV and radio audiences that were the basis of this image-is-everything conclusion were fatally flawed. In fact, the radio one, the radio survey, was amateurish. Further, all the serious research on the debates has proved that the Kennedy won because he looked good and Nixon looked bad conclusion is so vastly overstated that it should be considered a myth. Now, let's get down to the details of what actually happened. The Kennedy and Nixon campaigns had agreed to a series of four debates during the 1960 election. These were the first presidential debates in American history. Some people think the famous Lincoln-Douglas debates in 1850 were, but they were for the office of senator from Illinois, not president. The first Kennedy-Nixon debate on September 26 was the most famous, attracted the largest audience, and was the origin of the myth about appearance influencing voters. Nixon had recently got out of the hospital where he had been laid up for 2 weeks for a knee injury that had become infected. He didn't take any additional time off to recover, and he even went to campaign events until just a few hours before going to the television studio. Kennedy, by contrast, had taken time to rest, to work on his tan, and to prepare specifically for the debate. He also wore a dark suit to set him apart from the studio's background. The difference showed. Wearing a lighter suit and almost blending in with the studio walls, Nixon looked pale and tired and thin. And since he refused to put on television makeup, his beard stubble sort of showed visibly on screen. This was noticed at the time by Nixon campaign staff and even by the vice president's mother, who called him afterwards to ask whether he was still sick. Now, there's no doubt that Kennedy looked better than Nixon in that first debate, but did it actually make a difference? Did people notice each candidate's appearance enough to influence their view of who won the debate and perhaps influence their voting choice in that November's election? As you might imagine, buzzkillers, public opinion polls were taken after that debate, but those polls were rife with problems. In the first place, although polling had been around for a while, the polling methodology didn't have the kind of rigor that major polls nowadays do. Nor did many of the polling organizations think carefully about factors that are now essential before pollsters even begin to ask voters for their opinions. These include the geographic area of those polled, and pre-debate preferences in terms of party or religion, and in the election of 1960, religion is very important. Finally, none of the polling organizations asked respondents whether they had watched the debate on television or listened to it on the radio, except for one polling organization. A market survey conducted by Sindlinger and Company after the first debate showed that 30% of those who watched the debate on television thought Kennedy had won, while 29% thought Nixon had won. 49% of those who listened to the radio broadcast of the debate thought Nixon had won, while only 21% of radio listeners said that Kennedy had won. These results were the origin of the story that Nixon won on radio and Kennedy won on television. Because of this survey, the only one that divided the media, if you will, many commentators in 1960 chalked Kennedy's television victory up to his healthier appearance. And countless more have jumped on that analytical bandwagon. But here are the problems with their analysis. The Sindlinger poll only surveyed 282 radio listeners, which is between 600 and 800 fewer than is considered the minimum number for a legitimate survey. More than 87% of American households had televisions by 1960. People who only had radios overwhelmingly lived in rural areas. In some cases, they had radios because they were out of the range of television signals. Kennedy had little support in rural areas, partly because they were heavily Protestant, but also because they were heavily Republican. So the Sindlinger poll falls apart on even cursory scrutiny because of questionable methodology. But there are two other reasons why this ingrained political myth is faulty. First, other evidence of the difference between the TV and the radio versions of the debates is all anecdotal and pretty slender at that. Ralph McGill, a prominent syndicated columnist, wrote at the time that he had polled, quote, a number of people who had heard the first debate over the radio and that they, quote, unanimously thought Mr. Nixon had the better of it. But this was hardly a scientific poll and at the very most consisted of two dozen or so people. New York Herald Tribune columnist Earl Matzo reported the same thing. That is, he had talked to, quote, a number of people, and they all thought Nixon had won the radio version of the debate. Now, the second main reason we all believe this is true is because of the work of journalist and popular historian Theodore H. White. White's genius was to realize that presidential elections provided great opportunities to analyze American culture and history in the making. His Making of the President 1960 was not only the first of four such studies, 1964, 1968, 1972 were the other ones, it won the Pulitzer Prize and heavily influenced at least two generations of American readers, including yours truly. White's work was so widely read and so well regarded that he was seen as the best chronicler of the history of presidential elections. Unfortunately, White repeated the flawed conclusions drawn from the Sindlinger poll and other stories he'd heard from the syndicated columnists I mentioned earlier. Those conclusions were that Nixon lost the television debate but did better according to the radio audience. And White wrote these conclusions as history, and people read and accepted them as history. Now, White didn't provide footnotes or citations to the surveys he mentioned or to the columnists whose interpretations he used, so technically speaking, subsequent scholars couldn't find it easy, anyway, to scrutinize his opinion survey conclusions. But since the Sindlinger poll was the only one that analyzed the difference between TV viewers and radio listeners, it's safe to conclude that that's where White got his numbers. Once Theodore White's book became more or less the standard account of the 1960 election, the faulty story of Kennedy's image winning the TV debate, and Nixon's substance winning the radio debate became gospel. And Buzzkill Institute researchers fear that it will be repeated as gospel. And we worry that it will continue to influence how candidates prepare for debates and how future presidential debates are compared to the very first one in 1960. Now that you know the truth, Buzzkillers, don't fall for this myth during the next presidential debate. Talk to you next week.